We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have like a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
And welcome to In the Know, the Hornets 24/7 podcast. Your knowledgeable hosts are Michael McNamara.
Me and a grizzly bear, I'm betting on me.
And me, Ryan Schwan.
I've been playing some Dungeons & Dragons because I'm really cool like that.
Let's get it started. All Hornets, all the time. Welcome to the show. Today we're going to do something a little bit different. Instead of all the doom and gloom you've probably been hearing about if you've been paying attention to the NBA, where there's the lockout will last forever, the whole world's going to fall apart, the Hornets will be sold, and Chris Paul will be traded to Orlando, we're instead going to talk about what we would love to see happen in this offseason so that the team can actually come back and compete next year. It's basically our takes on what our plans would be if we're Dell Demps, if we're trying to put together the best possible team we can. And of course, we're trying to be as realistic as possible. We're not going to say Emeka Okafor and Bellinelli are a perfect return for Dwight Howard. You will not hear us saying Dwight Howard will come for that trade. At least I'm hoping you won't be saying that, correct, Michael?
No, that's not part of my plan, but now that you say it, it sounds kind of alluring.
Yeah, that's like the trade that everybody seems to love, but it's not happening, so stop thinking about it. So, now to make this interesting, neither Michael nor I have talked to each other about what our plans are. So, I'm kind of hoping we don't have the same plan because that'd be kind of lame. But then, of course, we get to ambush each other and, you know, one of us will think, you know, oh, this is a perfectly reasonable trade. And the other one will, you know, mock them. So, hopefully, we'll have a lot of fun with this.
And yeah, I don't anticipate that just based on our prior 37 or so podcasts that we are going to have the same exact ideas, but I will admit that I was talking to my fiance today trying to predict what you were going to say so I could be best prepared to ambush you. So.
Gotcha. I haven't even tried to guess what you were going to say because I know it's going to be so batshit crazy that there's just not any, why even try?
Okay. See, I thought you were going to assume that I was going to go with my Batum, Odin, and Roy, or as the French Canadians call them, Wah. Trade, but I'm not going that way. So,
yeah, I thought you might go that way, but you know, I think you're really at heart more conservative than that.
Okay.
So I expect a little bit more. I expect you know, you're gonna trade for Nazi Muhammad and Rip Hamilton.
Oh, I'm gonna shock the stuffing out of you tonight.
All right. So how about we get started then? So all I'm right. Gonna let you go first.
All right, well, my entire offseason does center on a trade, and I know that's a little bit risky because it involves other people saying yes, and it's not only a trade, it's a three-way trade.
Wow.
So I know that because my entire off season hinges on this, I am leading myself up for a lot of criticism. But I really think I could justify it from multiple sides. So I don't know whether to kind of preface it first or just go ahead, but I am just going to announce the trade. And if you would be so kind, sir, as to give me some time, I will explain to you why this is beneficial for multiple teams. And I just hope that you find it beneficial for the Hornets. Otherwise, it's not going to matter what the other teams would do. So I just went into this trade. I didn't start off with any players or teams in mind, except for I hear this message over and over that the Hornets have to get longer. They have to get more size. And to me, I've just always take that as a code word for Emeka is not the long-term answer at center, especially if the other rhetoric is true that they want to bring West and Landry back. There's no way you could have those three and consider yourself a big team. So the initial idea for the trade is, okay, Emeka's got to go. That's all I knew. No really clear ideas in what I was going to get back. So I started to think about, okay, who would actively want Emeka? And I started to remember that one of our assistant coaches has just recently left for Golden State.
Mm-hmm.
The guy is defensive-minded, defensive-oriented. You see this in other sports. You see it in basketball where when a coach goes somewhere else, he likes to bring guys that he's familiar with him. I mean, a lot of the Chicago Bulls' success this year was because Thibodeau brought Brian Scalabrini with him.
Absolutely.
We could all admit that.
Right, yeah.
So I think Malone looks at his team in Golden State, sees absolutely no defense, and he says, I need an anchor here. I know Emeka. Let's go get Emeka. Golden State says, okay, well, we just happen to have a very talented big who's not getting along with some of our smaller guys, namely Monty Ellis. His name is David Lee. Obviously, I do not see the Hornets needing or wanting David Lee.
Okay.
So then from there, I started to go off, okay, do I want to settle for Monte Ellis back? No, that's not something I want. Do I want to move Monte Ellis and get Iguodala? No, that doesn't really solve a lot of the things. So I start to look around for, okay, what would David Lee get, on the market? And after looking around and looking around, the irony is that the Hornets pulled off a big four-team trade last year with this team at the center of it, and my trade is a three-team trade with this team at the center of it. So I've prefaced it enough. I'm going to go ahead and list the trade. The Golden State Warriors get Emeka Okafor, and they take on the one-year poor contract of James Posey. The Indiana Pacers get David Lee to come in and add another white person to their front line. They might lose Dunleavy, so they have to keep their quota.
Right.
David Lee comes in and assumes that position next to Hibbert, which I actually think would be a really good fit, those two together.
Yeah.
David Lee comes in. Also, Trevor Ariza comes in to the Pacers. And Trevor Ariza comes in because they have to have another small forward because they are sending Danny Granger to the Hornets. The Hornets get Danny Granger, and they also take on two bad contracts and actually one contract I like. So, again, Golden State gets Emeka Okafor, James Posey. The Indiana Pacers get David Lee and Trevor Ariza. And the Hornets get Danny Granger, New Orleans native, Charlie Bell, who has a one-year $4 million contract and basically gets to slide into that Marcus Banks role.
Yeah.
Of being paid multiple millions of dollars to do absolutely nothing. He comes from the Warriors, so obviously they're dumping that. Lewis Amundson, who's also on a one-year deal, gives the Hornets a backup center. And then Dante Jones, which is a salary dump from Indiana, has 2 years left on his deal at about $5.5 million. So just to kind of say why every team does it, I mean, Golden State is getting Emeka and taking on Posey's contract, but they're dumping Charlie Bell, so really they're only picking up an extra $3 million in dead money. They're getting Emeka by basically giving up David Lee, somebody who doesn't really fit, hasn't got along with Monte Ellis, and Louis Amundsen, who, you know, between Emeka and Ekpe Udo, they have people, you know, playing that kind of tough guy center role, so they don't need him anymore. Indiana is getting David Lee and Trevor Ariza. What I see as the logic here is Danny Granger is a good player, but he's never going to be the number one guy on a champion. I think Paul George, a guy that they drafted last year, could be just as good as Granger for one-tenth of the money. So you say, okay, if I could fill that position for one-tenth of the money and spend it elsewhere while putting in a suitable replacement, I'll do so. So they take on David Lee, and they also dump the only two contracts they don't like in Dante Jones and James Posey. So the Pacers get David Lee and Trevor Ariza here, and they also shed $4 million. So now they have eight players, all very good rotation guys, no dead money, and they have about $33 million, meaning they would have another 30, supposedly, to go into the free agent market. And think about it. They would have Collison and George Hill at point guard. They would have Paul George ready to take over the small forward role. They would have David Lee and Tyler Hansbrough at power forward. And they would have Roy Hilbert at center. Plus, they got $30 million. So they could go out and grab any big man on the market, even if they have to overpay. And they could go get a Jamal Crawford, a Jason Richardson, somebody of that ilk. So, you know, I know we're on the surface. And they also have Trevor Ariza to back up and be a bench guy at that small forward position, or, you know, to hold it down while Paul George is still growing. So think about all those pieces they would have, plus $30 million to go get the best big guy on the market and a shooting guard. So that's why Indiana does it, and the Hornets do it because, you know, obviously they get Granger to put next to Paul, get a legit number two guy next to CP3. I think Amundsen could be a good backup center, and I think Dante Jones, you know, the Hornets obviously lose a little bit of, you know, defense on the wing by going from Ariza to Granger. But Dante Jones is a guy who could keep people, you know, on the perimeter and play some defense as a backup two guard. So, as you know, I'll let you come in and knock the trade later. But just to kind of show where they're at, the Hornets would have Chris Paul and Jarrett Jack at point guard at this point. They would have Bellinelli, Dante Jones, and Charlie Bell, who again isn't going to play, but he's on the roster at shooting guard. And they would have Granger and Coupon at small forward. So I think we could agree that even though shooting guard isn't ideal, those positions are set. And I really think with a scorer like Granger next to him, Belly could definitely improve and get more shots. So I like those three positions.
Okay. So
obviously, go ahead.
So, I mean, one of the things that I didn't mention at the beginning is we agreed to some ground rules before I jumped in here, which were $60 million is the cap. So the number they're throwing around a whole lot in these contract negotiations is a $66 million hard cap. We don't know what it's going to be. Last year was 58 with a luxury tax. So we just picked a number saying, well, it's $60 million hard cap. Can't really go above it unless you're maybe signing like a minimum contract kind of guy.
Right.
So that's what we're aiming at. So with all those trades you just talked about, how much money do the Hornets have left? Because they still don't have a power forward and they still don't have a center.
They would be at $44 million.
Okay.
They would be at 44 right there. And you're right. They would have, I mean, their front line at that exact point would consist of Louis Amundsen.
Right. That's what I was thinking.
Right. So we need to add four.
Works of magic.
Four big men. Now, what I will say though is,
I guess I should say this.
Even with those rules, we could go over the cap with Landry or I mean, not as easily with West, but we could go over the cap with them. So
yeah,
we could go after the over the 60 with them. We obviously couldn't go over the hard cap.
Right. So let me say this. So far, I really like what you've done.
Oh, I was not expecting that. And how about I mean, do you think that realistically the other two teams could sell their fans and sell themselves? Or let's say I was Dell Demps and I talked to Indiana and Golden State individually. Do you think I could have sold them on those trades? Do they make sense for the other teams?
I think you can absolutely do that. I have a little bit of worry for Indiana because they really rate Granger, I think, higher than he's worth. I mean, honestly, if this was talked about last year, if somebody was offering me Kevin Love for Danny Granger, I'd do it in a minute. So, yeah. I mean, I think there's that much of a difference in talent level there.
And I think they like Granger, but I think they like Paul George, and those two guys can't play together.
Yeah, and I agree with that. So, I mean, I think you can make that sell, especially since you've managed to, you know, shed some salary there. So I'm good with it so far. And if they need more white dudes, they can always re-sign Jeff Foster, too.
I think David Lee and Hibbert would be a great fit because Hibbert doesn't rebound well. He can't really get any offense outside of the paint, and Lee's developed that 17-footer, grabs a rebound. I think those two could play off each other, and honestly, I think they could go after a Tyson Chandler or a Nene. They could really go after any free agents to match with an already good roster.
And I don't know if you're going for this yet, so we'll see in just a moment. But you've also conveniently gotten rid of one of the few teams that we've talked about that we think has a strong interest in David West.
Yeah, that was definitely part of it. So at this point, I need my 1 through 3 is set. I love CP3 and Granger. Mm-hmm. I like what those two do to up Bellinelli's game. I think that I got some perimeter defense with Dante Jones and Pondexter. I need to fill 4 positions, and really, this is, to me, it comes down to which way am I going to go? Am I going to go with West and a cheap center, or am I going to go for a center and then get cheap on the power forward position? And to me, it's really about, I guess my priorities would go West and cheap center just because I've made a massive trade, and I want as little turnover as possible. I don't want to try to turn over this entire roster, you know, in one off season again, and then hope that these guys gel together. So ideally, I would re-sign West. The number I have is 4 years, $38 million, with the first year starting at about 8. So the first year would actually be lower than his cap hold. So if I were able to do that, I would actually, take off a little bit of money. So that brings me to 52. I would sign Reggie Evans.
Hold on one second. I gotta say this. I knew it.
Yeah.
I knew you'd sign Reggie Evans. I actually tried to work him into one of my moves just so I could throw you a bone, but I didn't. Anyways, go ahead.
Yeah,
we got the guy who likes to grab people's nuts. That's good.
The rest of the moves are, I actually think the hardest move is going to be my last one, but basically I'm going to fill out the 4 spots with West, Reggie Evans, Aaron Gray, and then Samuel Dalembert, which I really think is the hardest move of all of this because all signs point to Miami as just a clear-cut landing spot, being that, you know, the Haitian descent and Miami and the chance to win. Dalembert's already made his money, so even if you can't, even if you can't pay him well. But the thing with that is based on these rules that we have. So if you're going to box me in with these rules, I'm going to use them not only for the Hornets, but everybody. Based on these rules, Miami has $65.3 million committed in salary next year, and that's without paying Mario Chalmers.
Right.
So, you know, unless he's willing to take the absolute minimum from Miami, so I'm looking at a 4 years, $26 million. I gave Gray 2 years, $4.5 million. and Reggie Evans, 2 years, $3.5 million. And that is my team. So I told you the 1 through 3. The big man rotation would be West and Reggie Evans. It would be D'Alembert, Aaron Gray, and Luis Amundsen. Obviously, Amundsen could play some power forward too. So those are my five bigs, and that is my roster with, you know, a kind of big three in their own right of CP3, Granger, and West. Hopefully an improved Bellinelli with more open looks, and D'Alembert. You know, I was surprised when I went back and looked at his stats that he only played 24 minutes last year. So I understand it's a downgrade from Okafor. I understand maybe he's a 26, 27 minute a game guy, and that means that I'm going to be playing some Amundsen, you know, Gray, and maybe even Reggie Evans or West at times at center, and I'm going to have to get by with that. But, you know, there's no way to make this team have five all-stars in the starting lineup. You got to bite your bullets when you do. That is my plan, Sir Schwan.
Okay. So all of it is very plausible, except I still don't think you're going to get D'Alembert for anywhere near that little bit of money. Because I have a feeling that he will be in demand enough, you're probably going to have to offer him $6 or $7 million to get him. Because I've already seen, I think, like three different other teams, even outside of Miami, who have expressed interest in getting D'Alembert as like a backup center, or even like a partial, you know, part-time starter. So
I said 4 years, $26 million, so that's 6.5.
I'm sorry. Okay.
But my backups, and neither one of these are going to be people that you jump up for joy for, but my backups, in case his price is too low, or if the Hornets want to go with Landry and go even cheaper at center, are Kwame Brown, and I think Brandon Haywood gets amnestied. So those are my really cheap. If the Hornets go West and Landry, they really do want to bring those two guys back. Somebody like Kwame Brown or Haywood, and just do a center by committee similar to what Miami did.
All right,
hopefully CP3 improves them.
So, two things.
Okay.
I think you failed at getting longer because we don't have much in the way of a center.
D'Alembert, you don't think D'Alembert is longer than Okafor?
Well, sure, D'Alembert is longer than Okafor, but, you know, so is Aaron Gray, and we're not going to rely on him to be like a starter. So, I don't. If the basic premise of your whole thing is they're trying to get longer, I don't think this is where they'd end up. I really like where you ended up, and if you put that together that team and threw it out there, I'd feel pretty solid about it. And I think Kwame Brown is a perfectly good backup center. I think that he has all of the rebounding prowess that you would need in a backup center. So I wouldn't be feeling that bad about that. Although, you know, Kwame Brown and Luis Amundsen at your center, it's not going to scare anybody, but there's a lot of offensive firepower between West, Granger, and Paul.
Right.
And
Belly as your...
Belly just as your designated shooter, because, you know, that's another thing. I've got to say this. I've said it before. Bellinelli is a good three-point shooter. People who like to kill him because he's streaky and because he misses open shots, every three-point shooter in the world does that.
Yeah, well, I mean... Remember the year Ray Allen was seemingly 1 for 14 every game.
Yeah,
and then he turned it around. Yeah,
yeah. It happens.
Get that.
That's what shooters do. They're streaky. Every shooter is streaky. Even Steve Kerr was streaky.
Yeah, and I do like that team, and I know it appeals to you because of the offense. I just wonder with this team philosophy. I mean, your wing defenders are Marco Bellinelli and Danny Granger. So I wonder if Monty gives the go-ahead on that. I mean, I think Bellinelli's a willing defender, and honestly, I haven't watched enough Granger, but, you know, people joke that he's not a greatest defender. But, see, I think every time I watch D'Alembert, to me, I think he changes far more shots than Okafor at the rim.
Yeah.
I don't think he's as good of a man-to-man defender. He's not good on the pick-and-roll or pick-and-pop. But he changes shots. So, and then again, like I said, you got Dante Jones, Pondexter, guys who could play some perimeter defense if you just have somebody killing you. So,
yeah,
I think people would like that team. You bring back, I mean, we lost Marcus Thornton. You bring back another hometown guy for people to root for in Granger.
Yeah.
And he assumes the role that he probably always should have had as a number 2/number 3.
So, I mean, yeah, I think in the greater scheme of things, you've probably made our defense like 4 or 5 points per game worse, but I think you've probably made our offense a good 6 or 7 points per game better. So, yeah. Okay. Yeah,
just to say for one last thing for people who don't, you know, who think that the Indiana Pacers would never agree, I think it's also contingent on what else they could get in the free agent market. So think about, you know, this trade doesn't have to go down day one. They could have something in the works with Nene or Tyson Chandler and say, okay, now we could pull that trigger, getting another big. And also David Lee had the exact same per last year as Granger. So they're getting talent back in the trade. But all right, I'm ready to hear yours.
All right. So I did a little bit different. I didn't just go for my one. Well, I do. I have my happy path. This is my offseason I'd love to see go through. But I do actually have, like, contingencies in there. So basically what I have happen is a really aggressive opening of the free agent. You basically get that week before free agency where you can work out trades and stuff like that, and then free agency opens. Basically, I have three moves that Demps would open the off, or actually it's four moves, technically. Four moves that he would open that offseason with, and based on which ones go through, there can be different outcomes.
Oh, but okay.
The whole core of it, then the very first step you have to take, and this will probably make you stand up and pay attention, is you renounce David West immediately.
Right.
So you say, because here's the whole thing about renouncing David West. He's got like an $8.2 million hold on your team, which isn't even that bad. But basically it makes us go from $42 to $50 million locked up, which makes it so you cannot make any offers of more than $10 million in this situation, which locks you out of some of the prime guys that are available out there for free agency. But the only reason why you need to keep those rights for David West is if you're A, planning on going over the cap to keep him, or B, want to offer him more money than anybody else can. I don't think David West is anywhere near that kind of max guy. He is not somebody who someone's going to break the bank to get. So I don't think you need the ability to offer more than anybody else. And so just renouncing his rights, you can still offer him a very good contract. You're not saying, I don't want you, David West. You're just saying, I don't need your bird rights. And here's a contract for you to sign if you like to. So here's my moves. We're starting at $42 million. We've renounced David West. We go out and we put offers on the table for David West for a $9 million contract. It starts at $9 million. Goes for 4 years and ends at 40. Basically, it's $41 million in the end. And then you go out to Nene, and he put down a $14 million offer for him. And at the same time, you're on the phone with your buddy Khan up in Minnesota, and you're putting Okafor on the table, straight up, for Derek Williams, the second pick of the draft this year.
Wow.
And see, now this is my whole, that trade, basically, if you look at that Minnesota team, the one thing they are missing more than, well, maybe others, they have a bad hole at shooting guard, but they also have no center to speak of. They have Darko Milicic and the guy named Pekovic, who neither of them are even, they're moderate backup centers. They're not even, I mean, they're just not good players. So.
But wait, you don't think soft white European centers develop eventually?
Well, actually, Pekovic isn't. Have you seen Pekovic play?
Dude's
kind of brutal, but still, yeah. He's also slow as hell. So basically, they've already expressed the fact that they're willing to trade Derek Williams. They tried to do it before the draft even went through. So what better choice? I mean, they're not going to find a better center out there than Okafor that they can go out and get.
Right.
So give us Derek Williams, we'll give you Okafor straight up, and it clears from up for us. And honestly, I would even throw a first-round pick if I had to get that. I mean, there's a whole opening gambit here. I would call them and ask Okafor for love. They would say no. Then I'd say, how about Derek Williams? And if I had to sweeten it, maybe I would throw a first-round pick in there a couple years that's protected. Just so Khan can go back and say, look, we got a true center, and I've got some even 2 years, I'll even have another pick that I can work with. And I got it for the second round pick, who we don't even need because we have Michael Beasley and we have Kevin Love. So we don't need that power forward, small forward guy.
And just to be clear, you would be getting Derek Williams as your future small forward, power forward?
Either.
Okay.
So we'll get to that in a little bit. So I think Derek Williams is a classic David West power forward-ish kind of guy. Actually, I think of Derek Williams as more of an Anton Jameson.
Right.
So he has that range out to the three-point, and maybe but he probably doesn't have the power of David West. So now, basically, we're sitting out there with those three deals on the table, and we can go any direction we want from there. If they say no, we have no way we can get Okafor for Derek Williams, because signing both of those other two guys requires that trade to go through, so we can clear a bunch of space for those two signings. So if that doesn't go through, we can just wait to see which of those two guys jumps on our deal first, West or Nene, and tell the other one, tough diddly. And just pull it. I mean, you can do that. It's maybe not the best thing in the world for later on, but you can do that. But in my beautiful world, we trade Okafor for Derek Williams. So we have 42, $34 million under contracts. We signed David West for 10, taking us to 44, for 9, taking us to 43. We signed Nene for 14, taking us up to 57. And I go to Detroit, who is trying to remake itself. And they're trying to go back to a defensive thing. Joe Dumars has already said that several times. He wants to get the Detroit team back to a defensive positioning. I go him with Ariza and say, I'll give you Ariza straight up for Austin Day or Jonas Jerebko. I prefer Jerebko. And both of the most either of those playing is making $1.7 million. But Detroit has room to accept a deal, which basically clears another $5 million off of us if we get him to do this. And I can't see any reason why he wouldn't. If he's trying to go out to his people and say, look, so we traded a guy who didn't play for us really last year because he was injured, or a guy who isn't really panning out so much and he's mostly an offensive sort of player, for Ariza, who is an acknowledged great defensive player, and we need defense desperately here, it's a perfectly sellable deal. And now you have $53 million. I would go to Big Baby Davis and also to Landry and try to sign either of them for $4.5 million. And Davis would be my first choice because he's bigger and can swing to the center when we need him to. If you get Davis for $4.5 million, you're now at $56.5 million. And then I go out and sign everybody's favorite, Willie Green, for $1 million a year. Maybe $1.5 million. I can do either. And I go out and grab good old Banga for another $1 million a year. And I still have $1 million to play with to sign, you know, a couple really minimum contract guys under the $60 million. And my starting lineup is Paul, Bellinelli, Jerebko, West, and Nene. And my backups are Jack, Willie Green, Pondexter, our buddy Williams, the Derek Williams, the rookie, and Glenn Davis, and Banga as just an extra guy thrown in there. And Williams, depending on how he pans out, because I don't know how he's going to work as a small forward. He actually has some ability as a small forward. Either if he pans out that he can play small forward, we can shift him to small forward for either a good series of minutes or not. And he can also cover the power forward while West is out, him and Davis. So basically, Williams gives me the flexibility to cover two spots, and if he doesn't work out at all as a small forward, well, at least I have a really good, promising small power forward that I can do something with in the future. He's an asset I can move. Now, some people are probably like, well, you know, I think a lot of people probably don't have the passion for Nene that I do. For those of you who don't know, Nene posted a 20.8 PER last year, and he is the second most efficient finisher on pick and rolls in the entire NBA behind good old buddy Tyson Chandler. And if there's anything I would love more in the end to see on this team is a sick pick and roll finisher running next to Paul again. So I really like the idea of bringing Nene onto this team, and I'm willing to spend $14 million. So just there, happy path. What you think?
I like it. I mean, I don't even know. I guess you do need those moves in order to have the money. I would say if I had to rank least plausible to most plausible, I know it makes sense to you, but I just couldn't see Detroit doing that trade simply because they've had enough overpaid middle of the line players on their team the last couple of years. I mean, they're just getting out of Tayshaun Prince's deal. They still got Hamilton. I mean, they're overpaying Villanueva. I really think that they're going to go more towards a youth movement with Greg Monroe and Brandon Knight, their new point guard. And it would just be hard for me, even though Ariza is a good defender, and I guess it makes sense if Detroit actually wants to win next year. To me, out of all of your moves, you know, that's the least plausible, but that doesn't mean that Ariza can't be moved somewhere, essentially dumped somewhere. I just think specifically Detroit is going to be trying to dump. Now, if they could dump a Charlie Villanueva or a Jason Maxiel or something, I could see it. But, I mean, I just look at their books or whatever, you know, you want to call with their salaries, and they just got some ugly deals. So I just think Dubars is going to get away from the mid-level young veteran type. So that's the one that sticks out most to me. But again, I think it might be a moot point because I think you can find a way to essentially shed Ariza. and then, yeah, the Okafor for Williams one. I mean, it does make sense for Minnesota. I wonder now, though, with Beasley getting into trouble with the marijuana again, if I think they're going to definitely explore moving Beasley first. But yeah, I mean, David Kahn did a great interview with Bill Simmons, and he admitted that they have multiple pieces that are very similar and that eventually he's going to have to make some kind of move. And the other reason I really like that move is Minnesota does not have their own number one pick next year.
Right.
So it doesn't behoove them to go through another season of sucking to get a top pick. They need to be good next year. Derek Williams is not going to be able to help them with that or really fit in anywhere. So, yeah, you put Emeka next to Kevin Love. You know, put Wesley Johnson at his more natural position of small forward, and then have Rubio running that team. And that could be a good team next year. So I definitely think that that could be a way to go. And then I'm just trying to get through my head how Nene and Wes play together. And I think, you know, when you first started going through it, I'm like, man, he's just acquiring a lot of the same type of guys.
Yeah, I don't see Nene and Wes actually that similar.
Yeah, and the more I think about it, I don't either. I was thinking more of build, you know, and Derek Williams was a lot like it, and Big Baby. I mean, to me, these are when you specifically talk about David West, Big Baby, and Derek Williams, those are all kind of soft perimeter shooting fours, at least offensively, and not exactly, you know, shot blockers or rugged post defenders defensively. But yeah, Nene does stand apart from that group, and I think they could work. I just, as I'm hearing your plan, I'm like, he just keeps throwing money at big men. But really, if you're going to spend it on big men. So overall, I do like it.
Right. And so, I mean, I was really, and honestly, I was really trying to figure out some way with this series of moves to get my hands on D'Alembert, clear enough space to get, like, offer him like a $7 million deal. But it's real when you have to actually build a team with 12 players with only $60 million, even starting where we are. I mean, everybody's thinking like, oh, we got $18 million worth of space. We can just go out and get anybody. But it's $18 million worth of space, and we got to fill 7 roster spots.
Right. And you also got to remember that while we have 18 million, as I've showed, Indiana has 30.
Right.
Sacramento has 35. So it's not like you're just bidding in a vacuum. Like, you're also going against other people, some of which have much better cap situations than you do.
Yep. So let me run these other little side things by you, see what you think of them. Because, I mean, I'm going to be the first to admit, though, having all three of those first gambits play out exactly the way you'd want is not necessarily going to happen.
No.
In fact, and I think my biggest question is, I don't think Nene would sign with New Orleans for $14 million.
To the money, or because he wouldn't know if Chris Paul is going to be there next year and he's on a rebuilding team?
So the very fact of the matter is, yes, Chris Paul, even if Chris Paul goes to him and says, I'm here, he doesn't know what's going to happen with this team.
Right. And
it's not like New Orleans will be the only team that can offer him $14 million or will even necessarily be the only team willing to offer him $14 million. There are other teams out there that may – Indiana is one of them. So is Denver. Denver's already talked about giving him a big deal. And New Jersey has talked about it. So Nene is not going to be not sought after. So that was my very first consideration is, well, what the hell? We put all the stuff out there and – Nene says, no thanks. So we still have David West for our $9 million deal. Where can I go to get a center now? Because I don't want Okafor. See, this is the very premise of every move I make. Okafor and Ariza are the two primarily overpaid players on our team.
Right.
But they actually both have enough talent where you can get something back for them or clear them out without too much damage. So I went to the same team you did if we ended up with just David West coming on board. And swapping instead of trying to move Okafor to the Timberwolves, I go to Golden State. Nice. And they desperately want to get rid of Biedrins. They do not, the owner has actually said bad things about Biedrins, the new owner.
Uh-huh.
So I don't actually think Biedrins is as awful as he's put out to be. And I think he was in a situation last year where he couldn't succeed based with the players he has. He is also a pick-and-roll player. And not last year, but every year previous to that, he has put up good numbers, and he's been a very, very good pick-and-roll finisher. And in case you didn't notice, that's a reoccurring thing with me, get someone who could finish a pick-and-roll.
Right.
But I think that you could go to them and say the exact same reasoning. You guys are looking for a defensive presence. Here's Okafor. You give me Biedrins. I'll take Biedrins off your hands. He's $9 million a year. But the price is you give me Darrell Wright. And I love Darrell Wright.
You look at just on last year, or did you like him prior to last year?
I actually thought he had a lot of promise in Miami. When he got minutes, he was actually not bad. But he was always stuck behind like Haslam in a lot of ways. And at the small forward, he just wasn't getting the minutes behind the shooters they always wanted there. But he broke out in Golden State, and he was like 24, so it's about the right time too. So I don't actually think that would, I mean, it might be a fluke year, but even if you look at his numbers, like just advanced statistics, even if it was a fluke year, he's still probably about, you know, 30% more productive than Trevor Ariza if he goes backwards. So Darrell Wright would shore up our small forward. It would put an incredibly good shooter on the wing next to Bellinelli, which helps Paul and Bellinelli. And he also can put the ball on the floor, and he's athletic. And, I mean, I'm not going to say he's the defender Ariza is, because nobody on that Golden State team is a defender. But, you know, I'm willing to put up with that. So now we have Biedrins and Darrell Wright. And I need to do the same sort of thing with Ariza that I just did previously. So I call up Indiana, and I say, hey, do you like Ariza for Kareem Rush? And essentially we get Kareem, and I think you can do the same sell there. They're taking on a little bit of cash, but they really need a wing player who can defend. Granger's not that. Paul George isn't that. And Kareem Rush, they talk about how he's a good defender, but you look at his stats and he's not good at all.
Right.
And honestly, this is a salary dump for me. But Rush, I expect to be barely rotation player, but enough to be there. So you dump Ariza to make a little bit more room for yourself now. You get Kareem Rush in, and you're at $48 million. I go after D'Alembert for $7 million. And then I go after either Carl Landry or Big Baby Davis, this time with a preference for Carl Landry. And that team would end up, and then I have enough money left over at the end that I can still pick up Willie Green. Probably not Benga at $1 million, like a couple $500,000 guys.
Yeah.
But the rotation now is Paul Jack, Bellinelli, Rush, Green, Wright, and Pondexter, West, with Landry or Davis backing him up, whichever one you got, preferably Landry. And then you have Biedrins and D'Alembert at the center.
Okay. And one more time, who do we get from Indiana?
Got Kareem Rush.
Yeah, I just wanted you to say that again because I know everybody listening is probably yelling at their speakers by now, but Kareem Rush isn't on Indiana. His brother Brandon is.
Oh, damn it.
So I just let you say that enough times so I could always hold it against you. But
I feel stupid. Forget about it all. I don't know what the hell I'm talking about.
Yeah, I think with getting Biedrins, you definitely have to get another center. Just because of the possible injury bug, but I love those two as a tandem if they could play 70 games a year, you know, plus playoffs. I mean, obviously your whole power rotation, overall is nice. You got a nice, group of shooters on the outside. Again, you're giving up defense, but I was willing to do that for my scenario, so I'm not gonna judge you on that. As far as anything plausible, yeah, I really think, again, I don't think Indiana does that trade and takes on Ariza, but only because, like I said, in my scenario, I really think Paul George is better suited for the three.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and Ariza really can't cover many twos. He could cover an old, slow Kobe Bryant. So, but I do think there's teams out there that would take Ariza for essentially a salary dump, or like your boy Kareem Rush is only making $3 million next year, so it would be shedding some money. But yeah, I think that's going to be the difficult part. I definitely think Golden State does that trade, you know, in getting a legitimate center in there for a guy who's been injured all year. And, yeah, they got to give up Wright, but that team is not lacking for scoring. And honestly, they've brought in people to that team, who had just lighted up from the perimeter, whether it's Morrow or,
right.
You know, guys of those nature. And they've been willing to let those guys go in the past because I think they think that they could replace guys like that with the style of ball they play. So I'd be very happy with that team. I guess the only place I would be worried is at the center position, just hoping that those two guys stay healthy or they could work together. But yeah, I could definitely see that team. So I mean, it would be better than last year's team, which was pretty good at times.
So the very last one I have put together, which is the best one in the world.
Oh.
So we don't. David West goes and runs off to New Jersey. Nene stays home in Denver. We can't get the trade for Derek Williams to go, and now we're stuck here, looking all sad. we say, okay, we're going to take Chris Paul and we're going to trade him for assets and start over. And no, that's not the best.
This is your positive podcast?
Okay, so this is not the positive part of the podcast. But yes, I just wanted to throw that out there.
And so
if we don't keep David West or replace him with a usable another power forward center, I say start over.
Then you're not kidding yourself. Okay, but here's my question to you before you get into that. Do you make some moves in the off season prior to trading him, I guess what I'm worried about is if that happens, then the Hornets will be in a very delicate position where maybe teams might not offer as much because they know he's on the market. Would you do anything to camouflage that so you got the best offers possible, or would you even consider taking the Denver route and playing CP3, you know, to showcase him a little bit? Or do you think he's at an all-time high now after that playoff performance and you could get as much for him now as you could at any other time?
I think that you will get the best offer possible generally at the trade deadline.
Okay.
So, I mean, I would do the as disruptive as it'll be, as much of a circus as it would end up becoming, I think you need to hold on to Paul, prove that he's healthy, and, you know, you can surround him with a bunch of players on really short contracts, and just, you know, try to get the best offer you possibly can. Because in the offseason, I mean, you can put together blockbusters in the offseason, and you might be able to pull in a bunch of people to do that, but I generally feel that you get the best offers when teams are ready to either to blow things up or feel like they could be making the next step with a superstar rather than the handful of good players that they have.
Yeah, my only concern with that is that by Chris Paul playing until February, the Hornets will not be as bad as they would need to be in order for their own first-round pick to turn into a top-five pick.
That's true. I hadn't thought about that.
So, I mean, like, think about Utah, and they traded Deron Williams. They traded him. When they traded him, they were a playoff team, and they did suck after he left, but only bad enough to where their own pick was 12th overall. Now, luckily, New Jersey's pick moved up or whatever, but I guess that would be my only concern is your first-round pick is going to be much better if you trade Chris Paul now than if you trade him at the trade deadline. So, okay, but go ahead with your proposal.
Well, I don't have a proposal.
Oh, okay.
I don't have so trying to figure out who you can get for Paul, I mean, I have no way to even go about doing that. There's so many variables in that situation.
Yeah.
I mean, we did that last year where we said, give us your best offer for Paul. And, you know, the offers that came in, some of them were all right, but nothing was amazing.
Yeah.
So I didn't want to dwell on it that much, honestly.
All right, well, I'll throw mine out there. What you got to do first is you got to get Navy SEAL Team 6.
Okay.
And you've got to have them kill Donald Sterling.
All right.
Because I think a big part of the Paul trade, when people make all these fantasy Paul trades, is they forget that if Chris Paul, you know, it's not the Deron Williams situation where a team is going to be willing to throw all these assets at a guy who is not going to resign because Paul only has that 1 year.
Right.
Where Deron Williams, New Jersey, was like, we got 2 years. We've got 2 years to convince this guy to come back to us.
Yeah.
Sorry, I had to try.
That was marvelous. By the way, you give Donald Sterling way too much credit, thinking that we need, you know, the SEAL Team 6 to take him out. You could probably just get a whore with a ring with poison in it, and he'd take care of him in a few minutes.
That's true, or one of the many tenants that he kicked out of his
right.
apartment complex. So yeah, we take out Donald Sterling because I don't think Chris Paul re-signs with the Clippers, if that's the case. But to me, that's the best team for the exact reason I said. So while I said that the Hornets need their own number one pick to be good, meaning they need to be bad, I don't know. They also, by trading Paul, if a first-round pick is part of that, well, Chris Paul is going to make that other team so good that now their pick is not going to be valuable. So you're playing that kind of tough tug-and-pull game. But the Clippers have Minnesota's number one pick next year.
Right.
So I could trade Paul now. I could make my team so bad that I have a high number one pick, and Minnesota is, and I get Minnesota's pick because Chris Paul is not going to affect them. So essentially right now, by trading Paul, I'm looking at two potential top five, top seven picks in what everybody assumes to be a loaded draft. So I get that Minnesota first pick from them. I also make them take Ariza. I get back Aminu. And I get Eric Bledsoe from them as well. And I mean, I know people want Gordon or DeAndre Jordan, but I don't think that they're doing that. And then, you know, maybe some other things to make it work. So maybe Chris Kamen comes in, and then I could find a team to move him for other pieces. So essentially, yeah, it's Chris Paul, a dump of Ariza. You get your small forward of the future in Aminu. You get, at the very least, a backup point guard of the future in Bledsoe. And you're looking at two number one picks in a stacked draft. Another asset in Kamen that hopefully you could move for something younger, and you just go total rebuild.
Yeah. I think I'd insist on DeAndre Jordan via sign. You're not getting Gordon out of them, but, I mean, and that'd be a scary team. If they can keep Gordon healthy, Blake Griffin, Paul, and Gordon, holy crap.
Yeah, I don't think you're getting Jordan. I mean, DeAndre Jordan's Blake Griffin's best friend.
Yeah, it's still... And, I think you got to insist on some point. They're getting frickin' Chris Paul. I think DeAndre Jordan is a reasonable price.
Yeah, yeah, but I mean, that Minnesota pick could also be a 10-time All-Star when it's all said and done. So, I mean, if you're looking at that pick in that way, yeah, and maybe you get a third team involved to get one more, you know, quality asset or pick or whatever, but to me, that's the team. If somehow we could find a way to put Donald Sterling 6 feet under, I think they're the ideal trade partner for multiple reasons.
You're such a cold-blooded killer, man.
Oh, I'll kill a snitch right now. I'm not afraid to go back.
You and your grizzly bear.
Yeah. No, I mean,
according to you, you just put an ostrich in the room with Donald Sterling and things are all over.
Exactly. Yeah, send him on an all-expenses-paid safari. So, all right. Well, I think this has been a pretty positive podcast. I think people will enjoy their month.
Yeah, so when you listen to this, why don't you hop on the site. I'll see if I can get a poll up in the podcast thing and vote which one you like better. You like our good old buddy Danny Granger, Michael McNamara's big move, or mine with Nene and Derek Williams. So you guys go ahead and put a vote up there, see which one you like better. And of course, since it's always fun to do this, throw something in the comments about your own preferred trades. I'm sure everyone has someone. And if any of you mention Dwight Howard, I spit on you.
Yeah. All right.
Got anything else you want to talk about?
Not really. I'm,
Oh, hey, Game of Thrones? Freaking awesome.
Yeah.
I love that book. I love that series. And Game of Thrones, a TV show, was dead on and fantastic.
All right, yeah, it's on HBO every waking moment, so I don't think you'll miss it if you're looking for it. Just want to give a shout-out. I will actually be in New York City this week. I'm not doing any book signings, but you can find me at the Leo House. I will also be touring around many other parts of New York City, so if you see me on the streets, we got any fans in New York, come on and say hi to Michael McNamara.
Because they're going to recognize you.
I don't know. Do a Google search. That's all I got. All
right, so thanks everybody for listening, and we'll come by probably in a couple few weeks to talk about something.
Yeah, about Danny Granger, Danny Granger's press conference.
Or are you guys going to be on your honeymoon then?
Every day is a honeymoon, you know, when you met a beautiful woman like that.
She's in the room.
Yeah, she actually is, but it is true nonetheless.
All right, so thanks everybody for listening. Bye.
Night. It's a party town, ain't nothing but a party. How about New Orleans?